When Samuel got to be an old man, he set his sons up as judges in Israel. His firstborn son was named Joel, the name of his second, Abijah. They were assigned duty in Beersheba, but his sons didn't take after him. They were out for what they could get for themselves, taking bribes, corrupting justice. Fed up, all the elders of Israel got together and confronted Samuel at Ramah. They presented their case. Look, you're an old man and your sons aren't following your footsteps. Here's what we want you to do. Appoint a king to rule us, just like everybody else. When Samuel heard their demand, give us a king to rule us, he was crushed. How awful. Samuel prayed to God. God answered Samuel, go ahead, do what we're asking. They are not rejecting you. They've rejected me as their king from the day that I brought them out of Egypt till this very day. They've been behaving like this, leaving me for other gods, and now they're doing it to you. So let them have it their own way, but warn them of what they're in for. Tell them the way kings operate and just what they're likely to get from a king.
Thanks. And now two girls are going to come up. Oh, Esther, that's it.
Then God spoke to Samuel. I'm sorry I ever made Saul king. He's turned his back on me. He refuses to do what I tell him. Samuel was angry when he heard this. He prayed his anger and disappointment all through the night. He got up early in the morning to confront Saul, but was told, Saul's gone. He went to Carmel to set up a victory monument in his own honour and was then headed for Gilgal. By the time Samuel caught up with him, Saul had just finished an act of worship, having used Amalekite plunder for the burnt offering sacrificed to God.
As Samuel came close, Saul called out, God's blessing on you. I accomplished God's plan to the letter. Samuel said, so what's this I'm hearing? This bleating of sheep, this mooing of cattle? Only some Amalekite loot, said Saul. The soldiers saved back a few of the choice cattle and sheep to offer up in sacrifice to God, but everything else we destroyed under the holy ban.
We've been looking at the life of Samuel, so you've come in on number four. So those of you who haven't been here before, tough. We're looking at Samuel. The readings were taken from 1 Samuel chapter 8 and 1 Samuel chapter 15. And this little talk is called A Life with Disappointments. Let's start talking about disappointments. They happen. I mean, do you have children who have grown up and become a disappointment to you? Maybe you wouldn't put it like that, of course. It's not that you don't love them, but somehow they've not caught your faith or your values. And I bet you wonder, what did I do wrong? Today, I want to bring you some comfort. Have you been disappointed with a group that you belong to? That they have lost the plot or the vision of the organization and just become a club? I bet you're wondering, how did it lose its way? Today I want to encourage you and stay focused. Maybe you've been disappointed by someone you've helped to empower. You believed that they would make a great difference, but they just became self-centered and greedy. And you're disappointed that they haven't lived up to your hopes. I bet you're wondering if your antennae are off in your character assessment. Oh, well, maybe I was just wrong. Or maybe I'm not as good or as insightful as I thought I was. Well, today I want to give you some reassurance. Because bad things do happen. And it's not only because of you lack integrity or honesty or character or faithfulness or faith. Bad things do happen. Disappointments do happen. I mean, Samuel remained faithful and served God all his life, yet he had some really big disappointments. And if you take Samuel's life and you read the rest of the Bible in conjunction with that, you find this. The Bible shows that bad things happen to good people. And you all go, yeah, I know, but maybe I caused this. Maybe it was my fault. The Bible also shows that God gives opportunities that are blown. They're wasted. Look at what happened to Saul. So many opportunities wasted. And the Bible also shows that a person of faith can do all the right things and still see failure. Jesus himself came to save the world and ended up on a cross. Apparently a failure. In everyone else's eyes apart from God's, an utter failure with bad theology. And yet, this is about God in people's lives. So let's look at Samuel. Samuel was a man of God. He was born under special circumstances. Chapter 1, we looked at that. He was a Nazarite all his life. A Nazarite was someone who was dedicated to God. And to prove that he was dedicated to God, there was a couple of things he had to do. Or not do. I mean, one was, he wasn't allowed to cut his hair. Okay, and some of you have got that trait already. Okay, some of you have been overdoing it. But part of his dedication to God, he says, I'm not going to cut my hair until my period of dedication has finished. A Nazarite. That's not all they did, of course. Okay. Another part of his dedication was he was not allowed to come into contact with any kind of dead bodies. So meat was off the agenda. Okay. You didn't know that, did you? Yeah, meat was off the agenda for him. And the other thing was he couldn't drink. Now, I know some of you are looking now and going, God, that's a tough life, isn't it? No drinking, no meat, and long hair, especially in this weather. In the Middle East, it was even worse. But that was a sign of his dedication to God, and he was a Nazarite, as far as we know, all of his life. Never cut his hair, never had a drink, didn't eat meat. And he kept it. Not because he had to, but because he wanted to. It showed him and the world that God was more important than his looks, than his diet, or fitting in socially. God was more important. I don't know how you do that in this day and age. Maybe it's, I won't have a Facebook page because God is more important. Imagine that. That would be terrible. I mean, how could you survive? He was a Nazarite all his life. He was a servant of God. He was a prophet and a priest. His father was Elkanah. He was a Levite. And when he was dedicated to God, he was taken to the temple and he served there from a very small boy, possibly about 4 years old, he went. And he grew up there. Well, that was his family, being a priest. So he joined in with that. But the other part was being a prophet. And a prophet wasn't someone who just told the future. A prophet is someone who brought a message from God to people. And the message was a message sometimes of disappointment and sometimes of great hope. Hope now when you're disappointed. But he had to be open to God so that he could bring the right message and not bring just one from the Bible, but the right message for the right people. And he was a judge of Israel. So this guy has got a pretty impressive resume. Okay? Look at the stuff he's done. As a judge. Okay, a judge is, we talked about being judges last week. A judge isn't a good word because we think of someone with a gavel and boom and a black hat, you know, and just a passing sentence on people. But a judge was someone who led the people towards God and did what God asked people to do what God wanted. He's the last of the Hebrew judges and the first of the major prophets. Samuel is unique, and yet last week we were looking at how local his ministry was. He didn't travel more than 20 miles from his home. And when he went places, people didn't recognize him. He wasn't a big superstar. He was a local minister. He was ranked, according to the Jews, he is ranked with Moses as a key person in the history of Israel. Moses brought them out from slavery in Egypt to the promised land. But Samuel oversaw the greatest transition of the Israelites from being a theocracy with God as king to a monarchy with someone representing God for them. That's what Samuel managed to negotiate through, that so that they didn't reject God, so that they could cope with it. You would think that such a man would have a golden and a blessed life. Come on, he's done all these things. Born under special circumstances, a Nazarite all his life, a servant of God, a prophet, a priest, and a judge of Israel. You'd think everything would go well for him. Come on, he's given his life to this cause. That there would be blessings at every turn. And to some extent, that was true. He walked with God. He knew what it was like to interact with God each day, like I hope some of you do. His prayers were answered. His words, he had words of knowledge. And he was listened to as a prophet. He was a man of influence. And yet he was humble. He was all these things. And God blessed him. But he was also a man with disappointments. Shall we do a couple of them? You've heard a couple of them today. He was disappointed with his own children. Samuel had two sons, both priests, but neither with a heart for God. And you can't pass that on, can you? I wish you could. I wish you could pass on your heart for God. The fact that God has touched me and made me who I am, and I can walk with him and I can talk with him and I can feel forgiven and restored and blessed by God, even though things are going wrong. I can't pass that on to my children. I wish I could. I've got my grandchildren here today. I wish I could just magic it and touch them so that they could feel what I feel. They could know what I know, what it is to fall into the hands of the living God, to be blessed by him and touched by him. But I can't. And some of you know the pain of that. He had two sons. But they didn't have a heart for God. Oh, they joined in the worship. They even led worship. He even sent them as sort of ambassadors down to Beersheba, somewhere he didn't go, by the way. All right? But he sent his sons to the southernmost point of the land. He sent them there, said, set up a place of worship there for the people. And they did. But their hearts weren't in it. Instead of giving to God, they took some for themselves. And they kept doing it. And gradually, their heart for God grew cold. And that's what it takes. Just you going your own way, little by little. Say, yeah, I'm part of the church. Yeah, I'm part of this. Yeah, I'm part of that. But gradually, your heart gets more and more distanced from the heart of the matter, which is you walking with God. They turned aside from their calling to dishonest gain, bribery, and the perversion of justice, just like Eli's sons did when Samuel was a boy. And you can almost see history repeating itself. Eli had two sons. They went after, other things. Samuel had two sons, and they went the same way. Do you think that wasn't a disappointment to Samuel? Do you think he didn't cry out at night and say, Lord, what's happening? Many of us know that place where we believe our children are God's gift to us, a loan to us, a treasure to bring up in the ways of the Lord, only to be disappointed by their choices. We still love them, but we know that they are missing out on the adventure of faith. And we wonder if it was our fault. And we look at others' children who have accepted Christ and pursue him with all their hearts, and our hearts bleed. I wonder if God whispered to him, Samuel, I need your children to show the world that it's not by birth, but by grace that people are saved. We don't know what happened to his boys later in life. Did they find God? Did they repent? The question is left open, but I hope they did. I really do. Then there was the disappointment with Israel. And Samuel himself felt a failure because of their request for a king. All his life, he has told people, God is your king. You're different from other nations, because God is your king. Walk in his ways, talk to him, and he will lead you in battle, and he will inspire your judges and your priests and tell you how to win a battle. Who to call up, who to do this, where to go, how to win. Just listen to God. And as he gets older and he's done all this for them, they go, you know what? That's too hard. Let's have a king. Like everyone else. And the fashion for a king was prominent then. So they wanted one. And that was a big disappointment. And Samuel, he was displeased, and he thought God would be displeased as well. And I can imagine Samuel, if he wasn't listening to God, I can imagine Samuel coming out and going, you're wrong. You're all wrong. You should have God as king. Haven't I taught you anything? But he doesn't. He prays to God, and he is amazed that God should say, give him a king. And I can imagine Samuel leafing through the Old Testament saying, no, it says here you shouldn't have a king. Deuteronomy tells me they shouldn't have a king. That God is our king. But he's listening to that whisper of God. And because he does that rather than just read the Bible, he hears God speaking into the situation. Also in Deuteronomy, it says one day they'll want a king. And Samuel reads that and goes, you know what? That one day is today because God has said so. And he hears God. And he was amazed at God's answer. Samuel didn't condemn Israel for their desire for a king. Moses predicted that one day it would happen. It's Deuteronomy 17, by the way, if you want it. But Samuel predicts that their king rather than God will own their allegiance and will take from them rather than give to them as God has done. That their service to God will be replaced by servitude to a king. And they still wanted it. Fashion can be a hard master. And Samuel followed God even when the country was going down the wrong road. He listened to God despite knowing the scriptures. He enabled in order to ensure that God was not abandoned by the people. He made sure that the choice of a king was not a choice of faith because God had spoken. Sometimes you will hear the whisper of God. saying, let it go. This is not about you, it's about me, and I can handle it. Let it go. But you're standing there demanding justice and righteousness and respect. And the little whisper will come, let it go. I can handle this. Your group wants to change its image or its direction or its emphasis, and you believe it's going down the wrong road. Do you stand up until they run over you with a bus, or do you step aside, or do you enable the best outcome in the circumstances? What does the whisper of God say on this occasion? After you've warned, or do you abandon, or do you enable? Samuel was disappointed with the nation and could have fallen into cursing them and standing against them and denying their choice as ungodly. But God used it to give us all a picture of a heavenly, righteous servant king who would rescue his people and take them to glory. The real promised land. He used their mistake so that we could sing, Jesus is King. And I will adore him. He was disappointed with his people. But he was also disappointed with Saul. Saul was God's chosen man. It wasn't an accident that Saul became king. It wasn't a mistake. You read 1 Samuel 9 and it tells, you know, he was led to Samuel. Samuel had a vision about Saul coming to him. He was chasing his donkeys because he'd lost them. And they turn up together. And the whisper of God says to Samuel, this is the guy that's going to be king. Give him the king. And he invites him to a big feast. And he anoints him. He says, you're going to be king. And later on, he introduces him to the whole nation. Here's your king. Magnificent man. Brave. Honorable. Kind. Big. So why did God choose him if he would reject him later? This is like, why did God let me marry the wrong person? When he knew they would hurt me? Why did God let me go down this route when he could see the damage that would be done? You know, that kind of racking up the questions when life goes pear-shaped. Why did God allow that? He could see this. But that's because God is God. And he gives you opportunities but doesn't guarantee you results. And here he is, giving an opportunity. Saul made some bad choices. And Saul was chosen by God and sent to Samuel. And God, it says this in 1 Samuel 9, God changed Saul's heart. He became a worshiper. He was even numbered amongst the prophets. He went down a road and all these prophets were prophesying. I don't know what that means, but it sounds like, you know, they were worshiping God and in the spirit on the day. And when he came near them, he did the same thing. God was in him and using him, and it was magnificent. Such that people were saying, is Saul also amongst the prophets? Wow. That's something really good. He was in. He was right in the heart of it. In these days, we'd say, he was saved. He was a church member. He was on for leadership in the church. And he kept making bad choices. I mean, he's not unsaved. But what happened in chapter 8 was God had said, you know, this goes well. This man, he's going to do such great things. A whole dynasty is going to come of him. And because he didn't, we do not call Jesus the son of Saul. We call Jesus the son of David. Because he kept making bad choices. First, he lost his dynasty, so his son wouldn't be king. And when he kept on doing the same things, letting himself down, letting God down, letting the nation down. And it wasn't just one offense, it was repeated offense. God said, well, you've not only lost your dynasty, you've now lost the throne. And you know what? He didn't lose the throne. He didn't. He was king for 40 years. But God wasn't with him. He had the position and he had the power, but the Spirit of God didn't sing in his heart anymore. And I feel sorry for him because he kept on making bad choices. I hope you don't do that. He was disappointed. He stopped listening and thought he knew it all. He kept blaming everyone else when things went wrong and taking the glory when things went right. He also overstepped his authority, assuming that because he was chosen by God, he had God's blessing in everything he did. God doesn't work like that. He decided he was going to be a priest, and God said no. He stopped listening. He listened to his instincts and his fears rather than the whisper of God. He assumed he knew what he was doing and what God was doing and was the same thing. And he closed his ears to everything else. Samuel didn't do that, but Saul did. In the end, he was rejected. The Spirit of the Lord left him. It says that in 1 Samuel 16. And that's a horrible way for a spiritual person to live. Without the Spirit. I wouldn't let my dog do that. I would plead with them and beg them. Open your heart again. Let the Spirit of God in. Repent, it's called. Turn around. Face God again. Because being in the church and doing the worship and doing all the other stuff, when there's no heart, it's just boring religion, and you will end up with guilt and fear and a life that's not really yours. He was still part of God's people, was Saul, but he was rejected as a leader because of his actions and his attitudes. And it teaches us that God gives opportunities to everyone. Everyone. God doesn't have this big plan that says, well, I know you're going to reject me there, and I know you're going to sin there, therefore I'm not going to do anything with you. He doesn't work like that. He sees you today, and he sees your heart today, and it's a heart that says yes. He goes, okay, I know I'm going to be disappointed later, but I'm going to give you every opportunity to walk with me and do stuff right. How we respond is our responsibility. How others respond is their responsibility. God gives opportunities to everyone. God cannot be accused of only offering opportunities to good people or successful people. Saul was given several opportunities, but he failed to get it. The first time he deliberately disobeyed, he lost his dynasty. The second time, he lost his throne in the hearts of the people. People used to say, Saul, isn't Saul wonderful? He's a blessed king. He's chosen and anointed. He's wonderful. And after the second time, people are saying, isn't David wonderful? Saul has killed his thousands, but David is 10,000. Saul's done this, but David's done that. And he's overshadowed in the hearts of the people. He becomes second-class king. Oh, yeah, we give him allegiance, but David's the real king. He wrote songs for us. He led us in battle. He had a heart for us and a heart for God. And we love him. We'll follow him anywhere. And poor Saul goes off in disappointment and ends up doing some terrible things. Things that are just anti what God stands for. He consults a witch. Yeah, he does. He's so in a bad spiritual place, that's what he does. What I'm here to say is, do not let disappointments ruin your faith. Bad things will happen, and it will not necessarily be your fault. God is not punishing you. You didn't do something wrong. There are other forces, other agendas at work. Your job is to faithfully serve and listen. Do the right thing. Hear that whisper from God that says, don't do that, do this. Because when you hear that whisper, it's a whisper that says, I love you. I forgive you. I want you to walk with me and talk with me and do life with me, and we will have a ball. That is the nature of this walk with God. Because as you faithfully serve and listen to God, you will remember that God is a God of grace. And he offers freedom and forgiveness to all. And all we can do is accept it and live with it. He sent Christ to die on a cross for us that we might live in this space with the Spirit of God in our hearts. And you can have it and I can have it. But it's one of those things that he gives. All we can do is accept it and live with it and show that it makes us different, especially in the way we face disappointments. For those who are leaders amongst God's people, there is a warning here to listen to God and obey his commands and not take for granted the things that we know if we want to continue to live in that privileged position of hearing the voice of God. Because Christ has given us the Holy Spirit to listen. Isn't that good news? Isn't that something we all, don't you just want this? I want to be walking with God with that Spirit of God leading me. And I don't know, don't care where he takes me, as long as I am with Christ. That's the message of Samuel living a life with disappointments. Because in the end, he was raised to glory. And God said, well done, good and faithful servant. I think that's a great epithet. Should we pray together?